VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are joined in the studio today by our silent partner and in an occasional Saturday that usually has to do with soccer afterwards. Adam's son is with us. He's engrossed in something other than the show, shall we say.
As usual.
And when he's a little older, he'll pick up on what's most important in life. Anyway, we are here as always live, and this particular Saturday morning, you know, I probably love April as much as anything or anybody ever could around here, and I think today is maybe the best day we've seen yet in the best month of the year. So it is absolutely glorious.
It is beautiful. It is, no doubt.
In fact, almost enough to make you want to go play soccer.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking forward to the game.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
There's actually a funny story that I don't think I told you having to do with the young man sitting to my right.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out.
As you know, he has a small account that a UTMA account that I put money into.
I know where you're going here.
And I'm trying to get the kids involved in investing and what daddy does for a living and stuff like that, planning for their future. And so I let them select what goes in the accounts after I, you know, walk through all the options with them. And Justin happens to like video games, so he wanted to find something. There's one video game in particular, which will probably shock none of the parents who are listening to this, but he's a big fan of Fortnite. And Fortnite, if you aren't familiar with it, is the hottest thing out there right now. It is, like, I think that they estimated it's owned by a private company, but they estimated that the game brought in over $1 billion to the company last year. So it is the biggest thing. And Justin wanted to capitalize that on that and the popularity of Fortnite, but you can't buy the company because it's private. But there is a Japanese company that owns 40% of Epic Games that creates it, and there's one ETF that has 40% of the ETF is in that one company. So after some research, he decided that's what he wanted to buy. Well, this past quarter, Justin's little account was our number one performing account at our business. So video games are hot.
Well, you know what the wise old man once said, and I don't mean me. It is possible to become very wealthy by under-diversifying.
Yeah.
It is not, however, possible to stay very wealthy by under-diversifying.
This is true, but he also owns the total market, broad market index. So that's half his account, and the other half is in the specialized ETF. So that was a good combo this year so far.
Problem with a lot of stock pickers is that's what they do. They only pick stocks.
Right.
Whereas right now, if I were investing in this market, I wouldn't want to be in individual stocks. Because, man, when this market punishes a stock lately.
Oh, it's been harsh.
Brutal.
Intel 3M this week. Oh, brutal.
And yet, someone who's in this room predicted that there was a very good likelihood that this bull market would get extended this particular past week. And I took all the way up till Tuesday night to prove myself correct, right?
Mm-hmm. Briefly.
Now, it's very difficult to reach with my arthritis and stuff, to reach far enough back so I can pat myself on the back. But I'll try anyway.
Right.
But what a week, huh?
No doubt. It was a great week. There's been a trend recently where one index for the week is down and the other two are up. And it continued this week. The Dow dropped slightly, 16.2 points, or about 0.1%. The other two indexes were really strong. The S&P gained 1.2% and the NASDAQ was up 1.9%. So as long as you weren't only in mega cap stocks, you probably had a pretty good week. And all of that Dow problem, you could probably just point to one company, 3M.
Well, that's the problem with the Dow is just what I said. The reason I wouldn't want to be a stock picker right now, there's only 30 stocks in it.
Right.
And when the wrong one gets hit,
and it's
the Dow gets hit,
and it's that funky price-weighted index that doesn't make any sense, but that's how they do it. And so, yeah.
And yet, what do people look at when they talk about the market?
The Dow.
Yep.
Always. Yeah. Well, I've been over that so many times,
but it's the worst
index. But everyone uses it. Mm-hmm. So the biggest headline of this week came on Friday when the GDP number pretty much blew the doors off of expectations. The forecast was for a 2.2% growth rate, but the actual came in at 3.2. This is one of the largest, quote-unquote, misses in a forecast for GDP ever, which I say miss, but it was to the good side, so it was still a miss in the forecast. So you would think that the GDP would be great news, but of course not everyone sees it that way. And to some degree, they are right. There was a little bit of weird numbers inside the GDP number. The biggest puzzle was the increase in inventories, which was massive. It looks like companies really boosted their inventories in a big way in the first quarter, which is kind of inconsistent with the news going into the quarter, which was that every company was saying that it's weak, the economy's weakening, we don't need it. So if that was truly the case, wouldn't you be cutting production and your inventories?
I have an explanation.
Okay. We'll get to that after this, I would imagine.
Yeah. Okay. Just think, though. Think government shutdown.
Okay. That's possible.
You don't have to say anything else.
Yeah. So initial jobless claims also jumped up this week to 230,000, they were down below 200,000. 230,000 is still a really good number, but it is a big jump for 1 week. It's kind of surprising to see that. Of course, this is not anything to be concerned about, but if it became a trend, then it would be concerning, but it is not.
You want another explanation for that one now?
Sure.
The week before that only had 4 days in it. Of course, layoffs.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah. All right, there was a bunch of home sales data released this week as well, and it was pretty mixed, as has been the case lately. But I think the underlying trend in housing is very positive right now. So last Friday, housing starts and building permits missed their estimates. Both of those are leading indicators of where the market's going. Now, that sounds bad, but I think that builders are just not catching up to what demand actually is because the especially with mortgage rates falling so quickly like they did in the first quarter, the demand is really strong right now. And builders are not building to meet that demand, which is why you're seeing the existing home sales numbers and the new home sales numbers, which just came out, really strong. The new home sales report for March just came in at just under 700,000. It's the second highest reading since the Great Recession. So sales are up 23% just since December.
And we have shortages in some areas too, like labor and materials.
And shortages of existing homes here in the Jacksonville market.
We were just talking about pathetic.
It is. It's really low. And things that come on the market, especially in the lower prices, are selling that day, multiple offers, over asking, that kind of thing. So you're hearing a lot of things about the housing market right now, and most of them are true, but it's so regional. So in New York, yes, prices might be declining even. People are leaving New York, so that happens, and they overbuilt, which did not happen in Jacksonville. Jacksonville looks to be a really strong housing market right now. And overall, I think the housing market is way stronger than what people are giving it credit for right now.
Well, and we're a ways into the earnings seasons now. And what's happened so far is that the earnings beat rate is on the high edge of normal.
Yeah, it's good.
The revenues aren't
not
quite
so
there.
Good.
And then again, I wonder, well, are there underlying reasons for that also, with the shortages, with the government shutdown, with this and that, the other thing? I still don't think these numbers are going to absolutely level out until we get another quarter ahead of us, but I would take them just like they are no matter what. All right, we'll have a few more things to say about the market before we move on. We'll have a trivia question after the break. There's just so much to talk about, it's hard to see how we're going to fit it in. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this trivia question for this week brought to you by Ken Bales, First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. How many jobs will the average American worker have in his or her lifetime nowadays? It has changed dramatically.
Yeah. Oh, so it's not one, I'm guessing.
It is not one. In fact, it's not even two.
Oh.
How's that for bracketing?
All right.
All right. Well, there's a little more to wrap up here, but Adam also has an announcement he'd like to make. So any more words of wisdom on the market? My one thing that's left is that this coming week will be jobs reports from ADP and the government on Wednesday and Friday, and I am looking for a very pleasant experience for those.
I hope so.
I do too.
We will see.
Yep.
Yeah, and also one the best thing out of the earnings news was that guidance is no longer really negative like it has been the last couple of quarters. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty neutral right now. So going into the past couple of quarters, companies were very negative about their future earnings, and that is not the case anymore.
No,
so
and
that's a positive.
There's a lot more of this earnings season to go to.
Yeah, yeah. There are above 500 companies reported, but that's just a fraction of what's actually out there.
Could be a big change by next week.
Yep.
We'll see.
All right. So I wanted to mention that, unfortunately, one of Justin's friends, my son's friend, Joe, is going through a really tough time. He was diagnosed with cancer. He has ALL,
ALS.
No, ALL, leukemia.
Oh, ALL.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's a form of leukemia.
AOL.
And he's going through treatment. He's doing great. He's a really tough kid. I'm sure that he is going to do awesome, but there is a lot of expenses that go with treating this disease. And tonight at Jacksonville Beach Elementary, there's a fun run that's going to raise money to help support his medical expenses for his family. And they're really good people. They're very good friends of ours. So we will be there. And if anyone wants to come out, it starts at 6:30 and it's at Jacksonville Beach Elementary School. So hope to see you there.
Very good. Well, you know, you've been listening to me a long time, most of you. I usually don't talk much about competitors, but recent events have caused me to make an exception today. In my opinion, there are a handful of people who are groundbreakers in the advancement of the public perception and the acceptance of what we do in financial planning. So many of you probably have figured out by now that I'm talking about Dave Ramsey. Dave Ramsey was featured in this month's Money magazine, and there are quite a few amazing things in there, but I took exception to some of it. Ramsey's radio show is, you ready for this? This is something you may not know. Third in the country behind Rush and Sean.
No way.
Isn't that incredible?
That's incredible, yeah. I didn't know.
Who would have thought? So anytime you're a public figure, which Dave certainly qualifies as, you're going to be worshipped by many and maligned by a few. And, of course, this was absolutely no exception. Now, since I haven't been written up in money yet, which I thoroughly intend will happen sometime.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But I don't know if that's their usual way of doing things or not, but I wanted to just give you a little background because we know a little bit about all the things they're talking about. He had a very poor relationship with money when he was young, he and his wife. It didn't sound like it at first. They had a real estate portfolio that peaked out at about $4 million when they were quite young.
Hmm.
But that's pretty impressive, right?
Well, it depends how much it's leveraged.
Well, one other thing. It was in the 80s. You know what happened on January 1, 1987, mm-hmm. when the taxes changed and IRS invented this little thing called the passive income and didn't allow you to cash flow your buildings off of what money you were making before. And, of course, it was an ex post facto law because it predated the January 1. So if you already owned an investment property, you were subject to it and you didn't get any warning and couldn't do anything about it. Property values plummeted. He was over-leveraged, lost the whole darn thing, and declared bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad way to begin, apparently. Maybe sometimes you got to fail to win.
Well,
because
they do say that
was
they?
1987,
mm-hmm.
and now he's worth about $55 million.
Probably not all in real estate, I'm guessing.
You can count on that. Now, if I could just come up with one thing in my lifetime where I could have an expression and everybody would instantly think of me, I'd be so proud. What do you think of when I say, I'm debt-free?
Yeah, he's definitely got a good tagline.
Yeah, I don't know if he's copyrighted that or anything, but he should have. Well, he's been doing radio for a long time, as have I. I've been a CFP for 18 years, been on the radio 17 of those, and I'm kind of, oblivious to a lot of the comments. But one thing we know for sure is that when you're sitting in your office with a private conversation, you can get down into a degree of details with someone's personal position and give very detailed, excellent advice. Not like that on the radio. You got a couple minutes to talk to somebody. You ask some general questions and so on. And part of the criticism was, well, his advice doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, no kidding.
But even some of that is wrong. What if I said, get out of debt? Is that good advice for everybody? I think it is. What about this? If you can't afford something,
don't buy it.
That sounds pretty good to me. How about you need more income? Get another job.
We tell people that way more often than I would like to.
How about more often than they want to hear, too?
Yeah, well, always the case.
But these things are not criticisms that are levied by people who are thinking about the circumstances. So it goes on. And to me, the whole later part of the article is what I classify as gotcha journalism. And I don't think it has any place in intelligent discourse. And maybe I'm taking this a little too personally because we do the same thing he does.
I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think that's valid. That there are valid criticisms of Dave Ramsey. He was very slow to switch over from mutual funds to ETFs when there's clearly advantages. And
I'm getting to that part too.
His return projections that he uses in his books are way too
astronomical.
High.
Astronomical.
Yeah. And so there are valid criticisms, but the ones that you're mentioning right now are not valid.
No, Dave and the Van Wees part ways when it comes to investing. Not completely, but I absolutely agree with everything you said, that he's kind of late to the party in doing this. Plus, his feelings on annuities don't mirror mine either. We're cautious. He's just, don't even talk about it.
No.
So he's, I don't know, I guess he leans toward that side. But one of the other things that they criticize is his debt snowball. And for those of you who know what that is, or better yet, for those of you who don't know what it is, the debt snowball is where you itemize your debts, credit cards and so on, and you start by paying off the smallest one regardless of interest rate.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, no, you've got to attack the high interest rate first.
That's not true.
That's absolutely not true. The tried and true method of getting out of that kind of debt is to start low and go up, called the snowball. That's also Dave's. So I'm going to wrap this up, but one of the comments that I pulled out of there, it doesn't take a financial planner to tell someone to tell someone else to live beneath their means.
Well, actually, sometimes it
sometimes
does.
Sometimes it does, exactly. I mean, see, he's been doing this a long time, people. I'm rubbing off on them eventually. Anyway, I thought the coverage was a little less than fair. Again, it's probably just personal for me. But I'm very happy that guys like Dave Ramsey exist in the space of financial planning. It brings a tremendous awareness of the profession, the statistics, methods, everything. In other words, the reason you got to dispense so much common sense in the country is because it's so uncommon.
Yeah, because it's lacking.
Yes, exactly. So in defense of Dave, one way or the other, I know a lot of people that come in to see us really love the guy and for very good reasons. How about that?
Definitely. That's one of the top things that we hear is that people are using his methods, even if they don't 100% subscribe to him. A lot of people use his methods, and very successfully, by the way. So he does a lot of good.
Yeah, he really does. All right, you remember, back to the market for a second, you remember the GDP numbers that came out in December and that had the year at 3.1? And then they had to make a revision early this year, and they revised it just enough to get down to 2.9 so they could say Trump lied, he didn't get his 3%. Well, they're at it again this time. This time I pulled them from MarketWatch. It could be anywhere. They're just asking these inane sort of rhetorical questions and then making some strange remarks like Americans are spending less even as incomes are growing. Why is that?
Because they're saving.
Really? How
novel concept.
Alan Greenspan on what Trump gets wrong and Sweden gets right. I can't think of anything.
No, me neither.
Except Sweden is going less and less socialist while we move toward it.
Yeah, and they have been for like
long time.
40 years
yeah.
or something
They're
like that.
They're not even really true socialist countries anymore. how a flight to safety amid a weakening global economy could complicate central bank policy. That was a mouthful of words.
I don't even know what that meant.
It was a mouthful of words. Consumer sentiment slips in April while personal finance outlook hits 15-year high. Okay, you get a picture here that no matter what Trump does, there's a problem with it somewhere.
Well, and the other, I think part of this also is the public's feeling that this bull market has gone on so long, they're scared and not unwarranted. I mean,
no.
It is a little scary when you're in a new unprecedented area, and we definitely are right now.
But does that mean it's going to turn over and die?
No, absolutely not.
If you can't predict a downturn in the economy using the current numbers, why would you predict a very quick recession coming? It does not follow to me. Oh, well, anyway, we'll be right back with a bunch more topics. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our trivia question is still out there. How many jobs will the average American adult worker have in his or her lifetime? Up from the... Well, my parents' generation was, they tried to make it one.
In many cases, yeah.
And not unrealistically, because pensions were the retirement vehicle of choice back then for the companies. And to get a pension, you had to work there long enough to get it vested and get the money up where you could actually retire. Whereas now, since the change that started in the 70s, we're into the 401k generation, now you are much more responsible for your own, which is a bad thing in that you have to accept the risk, and a good thing in that you can take it with you and do different things with it and see it and all that stuff. So it depends on the person how they're going to make
it. Really,
but
does.
Adam has actually a couple of comments about that very topic.
Yeah, speaking of that, so every year since 1999, I believe, there's been a survey that measures how retirees are feeling about their retirement finances. And I would guess if you listen to the show, this will not shock you at all, but that number just hit an all-time high. According to the annual report by the nonprofit Employee Benefit Research Institute, 82% of polled retirees are optimistic about their ability to live comfortably in retirement, and that's up from 75% last year. That ties the all-time records set in 2005 and 2017. And actually, the survey started in 1990, not 99. And then among those who are still working, 67% are confident in their financial prospects during retirement, up from 64% last year. And that level is also close to the survey's all-time high, which was 69%, which is within the margin of error of the survey, so basically tied the all-time high.
And a lot of that, I think, has to do with the change to the cash balance type plans where you can pull up your own 401k and it gets people more involved in it. Plus, let's face it, there's upside potential for investors that you don't get in a pension plan.
Right. And your prospects of your salary, quote unquote, in retirement are completely up to you. If you want it to go higher, you work longer, you save more, it's completely up to you.
Control has a cost when you're talking about financial things.
It absolutely does, and if you're willing to accept that risk, it can really work in your favor, though.
Yeah, unfortunately, nowadays, they don't really ask you which one you're going to get.
No, it's not up to you.
Which is why you should listen to financial radio. So you learn something about all this, right?
No doubt.
Speaking of learning, got your taxes done? Did you use TurboTax? If you use TurboTax, and if you don't make a heck of a lot of money, you might be due a refund. TurboTax has these claims about being free, and it is potentially so. Now, if you're making $34,000 or less, it should be free. But even then, you might have paid to do your taxes because the TurboTax people decided they were going to pull a couple of tricks on the public, and they sort of put in some little directional things in their software that point you over toward the extra services for pay side. And they made it almost impossible, depending on how you get there, from going back to the absolutely free side. So a lot of people wound up getting services they didn't need and getting paid for it. Well, TurboTax got caught with their fingers in the cookie jar, and they're actually being very good about it. According to everything I read, they're doing it very well. So if you go and if you use TurboTax and if you go look and if your income was not just a whole bunch and if you paid anything, in fact, even if it was more, you might have paid too much, there is a phone number for TurboTax, 888-777-3066. And if you need that, you can email us at the office and I'll send it to you, or you can probably just Google it and say, okay, TurboTax, I want a refund. You're not going to get it with an email. You call these people and you get a customer service representative. Tell them you paid and you didn't expect to have to. And apparently they will walk you through the whole thing and explain to you why you paid or why you had to. Or they'll say, no, you're right, and they'll send you a check, just like that. So if you paid money to get your taxes done, and I'm not talking about paying the tax bill, you have the tax bill, but if you did that, it might be worth you picking up the phone, making a little phone call, and get some money back. What could be easier than that, right? Works for me. Now, speaking of taxes and investing, remember a couple of years ago when we got into a discussion about tax liens? There's a traveling show, a traveling minstrel show that comes around once in a while, and it gives seminars on how to invest in tax liens. And they make some pretty lofty promises, like guaranteed double-digit incomes and that kind of thing. I took some umbrage with that a couple of years ago. I think it was in August of 17. Well, they're back. You hear the commercials now. They're back. So I thought I'd just do a little replay of my problems with this whole thing so that if anybody's actually considering doing it, I am not telling you not to do it. By the way, this everything I'm talking about is personal to me, but I know I share these feelings with a lot of people. First off, tax lien investing is absolutely legal and absolutely available. But most people don't know much about it. And as the old saying goes, if you can't explain it to a 12-year-old in 5 minutes, why is it in your portfolio? And you try to explain to someone who doesn't know about tax liens what it is, and I promise you, you're going to give them at best a half a story because the other half is a half you don't even realize. So knowing a little about a lot is one of the parts of doing what we do. You don't have to know a lot about everything, but you got to know a little about a lot because you're going to get asked. And if you don't know, you're going to do what I first did when this subject came up. You're going to go do some research. So let's first take umbrage with the claim that it's a risk-free investment paying double-digit returns. There are actually two types of those commercials going around the airwaves right now, and they are both abject lies. There is no such thing, by definition, as a risk-free double-digit return in an interest rate market that's around 2. It does not exist. It has never existed. It will never exist. There is risk, and you should demand that they tell you what that is because they have no legal obligation, not being fiduciaries, to do exactly that. So, okay, back in 2017, here's what I said. Investing in tax liens is a small little niche in the real estate category, and yes, it can produce very high, very nice returns, but there's more to be considered. Tax liens are generated when property owners fail to pay their property taxes. The taxing municipality has the right, once certain conditions are met, to place a lien on the property. If that lien is not then paid off, then the property will be sold from under the people through foreclosure. When the municipalities had it with the unsuccessful collection process, they will sometimes auction off these tax liens to the highest bidders. Now, when you're in possession of the lien, you have the right to collect interest from the property owner in return for delaying the foreclosure process for X amount of time, depends on the state where you're doing business. The interest rate can vary between 5 and 36%, also variable because of the state. So if the property owner uses this extra time and comes up with the cash to pay the past due tax with interest, you get the interest. That is your return. You do not get to sell the house and keep any proceeds. You get the interest, and the property owner gets to stay there. Now, if that doesn't happen, then the property can and will be sold. The lien holder is first in line, even ahead of the mortgage holder. Sounds pretty good so far, right? Here's some things you should know before you get involved in the tax lien investing industry. Each lien is attached to an individual property, so it's imperative to know something about the property, including what is the neighborhood trend? Are there structural problems on the property? Could there be environmental concerns? Are the owners possibly capable of paying the bills, or will you have to foreclose? What are your chances of selling the property for a profit versus a loss? That doesn't sound like there's much of a guarantee, does it? Understand the rules of the state. There may be notification requirements that you have to do. You may need a cash reserve to pay the back taxes while you're awaiting the completion of the deal. You must do your due diligence. But the biggest question of all is, are you the kind of person who can look a homeowner in the eye at the very lowest point of that homeowner's life and demand a usurious interest rate on his back, his or her back taxes, or you're going to sell the house from under him? I'm not, speaking just for myself. Some of you may be. Go ahead and do it, just so you know. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia question again by First Coast Alarm. How many jobs will the average American have in his working lifetime? Today, it's a number larger than two. And two was a lot when I was young, but not anymore. Let's see. If I told you that I had the best job in the world, you probably couldn't really back it up by having a survey or anything like that, unless, of course, maybe it took the survey among financial planners. But personally, I think I do have the best job in the world. Not everybody is so fortunate, are they, Adam?
No, apparently not. There was a survey done, and it was done by CareerCast, and it rated 200 jobs based on the overall quality of their work environment, amount of stress, occupational outlook, and income. And another company came in and took that data and determined the worst, I think, 30 worst jobs in America. So you may disagree with some of these. I certainly do, but they are interesting, and some of them I think will not surprise you at all.
Some of them didn't. Some did. Yeah.
Some of them, like the top one here, photographer, that kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
The pay is pretty low, but the employment is projected to decline 5% going forward, and a lot of that has to do with smartphone technology. So do we have a caller?
We interrupt the station.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Hey, yeah, I just want to take a stab at your question.
Sure.
I'm gonna go with the amount of jobs I had in my lifetime, and I'm almost 60. I'm gonna go with 8.
Well, that's not bad, but you're still a little light. If you were born another few years differently, you'd probably have had more than 8. Which I just verified for everybody out there that the number is larger than 8 these days. That's amazing, isn't it?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Well, no, I only did it after you.
You know, Jim. Not too long ago, but not too many years ago, I believe that was actually the right number.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. Yeah, I remember hearing that as an answer to this question before.
Right.
So,
but it's more today. Job stability is not what it used to be.
Well, and a lot of that's voluntary, though.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Variety is the spice of life.
You got to count the early years when you worked at a, restaurant.
Yeah, and frankly,
traditions or something like that,
So. Yeah, and I'm not actually sure how many of those were counted in the survey I read this morning. I suspect a good number of them. I think your job transfers, changes, slow down over your lifetime.
They used to.
Yeah, well, maybe not. Maybe not. Anyway, we appreciate the call. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, man.
Have a good one. The number is probably subject to some variation, but then again, so are the numbers I will accept for it. I'll take it plus or minus one, which gives you three opportunities.
Okay.
But it is greater than eight. Anyway, the worst jobs in the world include?
Okay, so food server, I don't think that's a shock. I mean, that's a job that a lot of people have when they're young. Not a lot of people make it a career. It does happen, but it's
not typical. No, but for people in the right circumstances who are good at it, it's probably quite a lot of fun.
Lucrative, yeah, if you get in the right restaurants and at the right time. So definitely. Roofer, especially in Florida.
100% absolute agreement.
Yeah, welder. That one surprised me because I think of welding as a pretty specialized skill that pays well. But
hot and dirty and stuff like that, but pretty steady.
Water transportation worker. I'm not even sure. I guess it's like working on a ship that moves cargo.
I guess.
Okay. That one surprises me. I would think with the globalization of the world and trade, that would be a growing industry.
If you're going to do it like Captain Dave did at the helm, the boss.
That probably is a good job.
Yeah.
Brick mason, automobile mechanic, buyer. That one surprises me because that actually pays quite well. The median wage is $62,000. So truck driver, and that's mainly due to the projection that self-driving type things will
come about.
That's
probably part of it, plus the days away from home for the long-haul people.
That's true. Construction laborer, definitely. Dock worker, sure. Bus driver. And then chef. That's an interesting one, too, because
we talked about that in the break.
There's wide disparity, though, in the top chefs and the entry-level chefs. There's a big disparity in pay and food, job security and things like that. And then we have pest control worker, painter, advertising salesperson, disc jockey, and that has to do with the decline in the format that we're on right now.
Yeah, job security? No.
Not really. Oh, sorry, we have another caller.
Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning.
What's up?
I'd like to go with how about 12 for your trivia.
Well, how about that? That is the exact number. How about that? Which Adam?
Well, I asked my wife what she thought, and she said I'd take that. And I said,
you always listen, right?
Yep.
You can say yes on air and not really mean it.
I'm in the garage now.
Yep, 12 now up from 1 or 2 when our parents were young. It's quite amazing. And really the reason that I even brought it up, I was thinking how many people over the course of all those turns take the little tiny 401ks that they've built up in the short time of employment and keep rolling them forward or rolling them out into IRAs versus how many spend them. I see that as being one of the big downfalls later in your life that you're probably going to lose out on a whole bunch of potential retirement benefits by making mistakes when you're young and foolish. I don't have any data for that, but it just seems to me like it's a potential problem. But anyway, you nailed it. I would assume I have your address, right?
You certainly do.
Okay. We'll take care of it. Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
12 is the number. Adam nailed it. I was asking the people around here when we first got in before the show went on, and Adam got it right, boom, just like that. So I, of course, wouldn't accept his answer. In fact, I wouldn't even tell him the answer.
No, I know you didn't.
Didn't want him to blow it.
So the last few are enlisted military personnel, corrections officer, newspaper reporter, and logger, and then lastly, taxi driver. And I'll give you one guess why those numbers are declining on taxi driver.
Could it have anything to do with about to be automated out of business?
Well, Uber and Lyft are the new taxis. So
I mean, it's got a short-term and a long-term component of why it's such a bad job.
Yeah.
You're going from losing out to Uber and Lyft and such and piling on top of that driverless cars.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's going to be a cold day in Ponte Vedra when I take a driverless car anywhere, tell you that much.
Yep. If you are young and in one of those careers, you may want to think about looking at another opportunity.
There's time for retraining.
Yeah. If you're older and you're already established in that career, probably don't need to change at this point because none of these are going to be disappearing in the next 10 years. But there is going to be less of them over time.
I don't know. I listened to the powers that discuss these things about the automated trucks and such, and I'm just terrified whenever the discussion turns onto those things. You know, we were talking about it. Sarah and I were talking about it on the way home the other day. We were at that goofy intersection on Marshall Landing Parkway where it intersects 9th Street, and the lights were yellow, flashing. And that has the strangest pattern of people turning right, left, turning ahead of others to go in, going straight ahead. And fortunately, traffic was pretty light at the time, but I did my zip across in front of a couple of cars routines thinking, what would a driverless car have done in that particular moment? How many contingencies can you program in here? And especially given that the other cars that are at that intersection may or may not be driverless at the time, then you got a human element along with a computer programmer. Are they going to meet literally? Or are they going to complement each other? I don't really care too much to think about that. To me, it's just trouble waiting to happen.
Oh, Dad, change is scary.
Hey, I'm almost in my upper 60s. Almost. And you never know. But anyway, that kind of wraps it up. I got so much more to do. I guess we're going to have to come back next week, aren't we?
Sounds like a plan.
And next week will be May. Wow. Where is it going? 4 months gone already. A third of a year passes by in less time than it takes to tell about it. Meanwhile, the market's good. I don't look for any particular changes coming up. Things seem to be just fine. And hopefully we'll see you next week having set some more new records in the market. If you're not doing as well as you think you should, give us a call at the office. Go to the website, Van Wee Financial. You can always email us, call us, or schedule a free appointment from there. See you next week, same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.